Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Supreme Court of the United States, I welcome Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, to help me understand the Supreme Court under what you'd have to say right now, extreme watchfulness by major journalists. I'm reading from the Washington Post. This morning, the Administrative Office of the U.S. Courts is set to release the latest financial disclosure reports for the Supreme Court justices. Our colleague, Toby Raji, writes the Post, covers the court, tells us she's watching whether Justice Clarence Thomas reports any gifts from the Dallas billionaire Harlan Crow or trips on his private jet. Also curious how much the justices, particularly Justice Jackson, learned on her book deal, whether Justice Barrett provides additional information about her husband's work or clients, and whether Justice Alito requests an extension to file his disclosure. Richard, I read this because it's a puzzle to me for some time now about what appears to be a partisan campaign, either to dislodge the justices from their lifetime appointments or to considerably embarrass and trouble them with allegations that have no merit. For instance, I can't even summarize the flag flap over Alito. About Clarence Thomas, was it necessary to say gifts from the Dallas billionaire Harlan Crow? In your experience, Richard, does the Supreme Court have defenses from this, what appears to be, well, in another world, it'd be harassment. I'll just say extreme attention by partisan observers. Good evening to you.
Well, I think most of this stuff has only begun in the last couple of years, and so there's no previous understanding of how it works. There have been cases where justices have been caught in very embarrassing positions. That includes Abe Quartus, who was forced to leave because of the way in which he had serious admitted conflicts of interest. But this, in effect, has nothing to do with improprieties on the bench. It has to do with an explicit political agenda, at least in some cases. Which is to say, we want to make sure that you don't vote in any of the cases in which Mr. Trump is implicated. And so what they're doing is they're pushing for overtly for disqualification on all the issues that are coming before the court, which have to do with some of the very shaky legal foundations of the cases that are being brought against him or against other people in January 6th who have similar kinds of plight. But it really goes quite deep on this. People walk outside in front of the houses of these various justices. If they live in Maryland, the state says it's a responsibility of the federal government. The federal government has issued through the most wretched of attorney generals, Merrick Garland, a statement which saying that people are allowed to protest in front by picketing their houses, and the only thing they'll stop is a break-in. The statutes say exactly the opposite, and they really don't care about it. So what it is, it's a kind of a thing which is not orchestrated by the White House, but certainly facilitated by its attorney general, and the overt nature is there. You get Sheldon Whitehouse and Dick Durbin saying to John Roberts, we want to talk to you about what's going on there. This is not the Senate. This is two individual senators whose partisanship is absolutely undoubted in any way, shape, or form. And what they're clearly trying to do is to embarrass them, put them up to making public statements so they can then argue that they have to be removed. Situation in this country is essentially the court is thought to be conservative. It's not nearly as conservative as many people start to think it is. And what they say is if we can't beat them in the way of sort of electoral politics, or we'll try to beat them up so that they're going to resign their particular position or recuse themselves in some cases. What they do is they legitimate all the attacks and they never figure out who they're coming from. So you get attacks by Justice Alito's neighbors saying that he's a terrible man and all the rest of this stuff. You never cross-examine the people who are making these charges to see whether or not they're terrible people. My view is the last thing I want to do is to engage in that kind of exchange back and forth. What I want to do is essentially make sure that people don't cover these kinds of disputes and so that people on the Supreme Court can do their way. The other thing that this does bother me, and it's not just Justice Jackson and Justice Barrett, it's also Sonia Sotomayor and so forth, Supreme Court judges are ridiculously underpaid. They get the salary of a first-year associate at a major law firm, and they're expected to bring some of the biggest issues in play. You want somebody in that kind of power. What you really want to do is you want to take their salary, multiply it by a factor of 10, and then tell them we don't want you engaging in these kinds of various scandals, because all it can do is detract from the ability that you do with respect to the work that you have. But you can't get anybody to pay government officials what they're worth. And so what they do is they capitalize on their fame by having these collateral ventures. And I think that that is just opened up to all sorts of complications. And it's came more and more. If you recall Ruth Bader Ginsburg, at the beginning was the soul of discretion. Towards the end of her life, she starts campaigning against Donald Trump in his reelection as president of the United States. It's just not the job of what a Supreme Court justice ought to do. So the attackers are really terrible. The Supreme Court justices are now put into impossible positions. It's not going to stop because there's nobody out there in the press or in the public media who think that this is a kind of mistake. So I just regard this as part of the general downward cycle of American institution. John, there's a kind of a thing that lawyers will tell you, at least this lawyer is going to tell you. You have a choice. You can either have a perfect contract or a decent contracting party, and you can only choose one of the others. What do you choose? The answer is you always choose the decent contracting party because you can iron things out as you go along. And if you choose the perfect contract and you get scoundrels, they will find a way to cheat, to bully, to simply use their muscle, and the agreement turns out to be worthless. And so what we've lost in the United States is a sense of comedy, C-O-M-I-T-Y, not comedy. This sense of comedy where people who know that they have power voluntarily refuse to use it, hoping that everybody else will do the same so that our institutions could remain on track. And what has happened is the bare knuckles are now out by people like Whitehead, now increasingly Dick Durbin and so forth, by all the protesters who think it's perfectly okay to picket in front of somebody's house. And what happens is they're really trying to wear people out. I remember talking to some fairly high justices saying, well, how come you don't bring your spouses with you? And you know, the answer is they can't leave. They're just so shaken by everything that goes on, constant harassment of their homes and so forth, that their lives are miserable. And I mean, I just simply do not understand how it is that anybody, regardless of their political view, could try to personalize it to the extent that they're willing to destroy the lives of other individuals for what are partisan gains. The other point I'll just mention about this is the people who take the most extreme positions are usually the ones who are most off the wall when it starts to come into this substantive situation. They don't have very good arguments like White House. He's an illiterate when it comes to these things. So he makes up by being bellicose for what he can't do by stating his general position. And so what you do is you see the most inane people making the most extreme position being covered, and all the good work that is done by people who are relatively inconspicuous and stick to their particular labors are ignored. So in the universities, I would say most of the serious scientists and researchers try to do their jobs, but the people who manage to get on the steps of the courthouse, as it were, or in the main quad and make all this noise essentially degrade every one of their colleagues who are trying to do honest kinds of labor. And so what you're seeing in the Supreme Court is paralleled by the crazy assaults that you're seeing on universities and all sorts of other institutions in the United States. It's easy to destroy an institution with this kind of hand tactic. It's very hard, even if you have people who resolve and good courage, to build them back up again.
I call upon your experience, Richard, because you've been teaching since the 1960s, and there have been several courts since then. Is this unusual, or was the Burger Court attacked and criticized in this fashion, personalizing it? Because it appears that the lifetime appointments it doesn't have any significance whatsoever. The pressure campaign comes in, even though they have no mechanism to dislodge the justice.
Well, I mean, look, it started with impeachment old one, if you recall, back in the 50s and 60s.
I don't recall.
And when I started,
I don't recall. That's why I'm asking.
Well,
you.
I mean, this went on in the John Birch Society and so forth, but it was done in the newspapers. What makes this thing so utterly different is it's not that you're publishing things. It's you're getting up in people's face and screaming at them at the same time you have all these hostile messages. And, you know, the rarefied politics about impeach this one, or the fights over the abortion cases both ways or another, you're murdering children or whatever it is that you're saying, always used to be done at a distance and in state removed. And it was never personalized to particular justices in the way it is now. and it tended to devote itself mainly to their public activities. It did not tend to try to get into their finances, their personal behaviors, their relationships with Harlan Crow, or anything else of that particular sort. And so what's happened is everything has ratcheted up again. I can remember the protest on campus in the 1960s, because there I was on campus in the 1960s before I started teaching in 1968. And there are pictures of this in the NYU Law School. And what do you see? You see a bunch of people in jackets and ties and nice dresses and so forth, carrying signs, walking around Washington Square. And what it was is it was a kind of a decorum about the whole thing. It wasn't that they didn't care about their beliefs, but what they did is they basically sort of behaved in a rather dignified fashion, projecting whatever views they turned out to have. And in those days, you know, when you were going after the abuses of civil rights that had taken place, you were talking about some really serious, terrible abuses. Today, what you're talking about is mainly fantasy. And so Richard Sallett is the president of Stanford. I've known the man for 30 years. He's a fine gentleman. And what does he do to deserve the fact that Palestinian students break into his office and sit there and say, "We're not moving until you start to divest"? This is 0.1% of the student body trying to dictate the policies of the Stanford endowment. And you have to get rid of them. But what does Stanford do? It does something, again, which I regard as very poor. It says his offices were occupied by people. It doesn't say that they were the Palestinians or what their particular move was. And so what happens is if you start having people who behave in a bad way, you're subsidizing their behavior. If when you attack what they do, you cannot figure out who did it, because they make the whole thing so anonymous that you have no idea what's going on or why it happens. What you have to do is you have to be much harder. I was at New College in Florida the other day, and Governor DeSantis came by and gave a speech. And I mean, you know, the man is a politician, which I am not. But he says, when we see people on the street, we send the highway patrol out. You have 1 minute to get off. Otherwise, we'll remove you. And in fact, what they do is they get rid of demonstrators in 10 minutes. They just cart them away. So what you have to do under these circumstances, the moment you start to negotiate with people on divestment or anything else, when they're engaged in the use of force, the game is already over. They've won. They would never get the negotiation without the use of force. Now that they have the use of force, they can do it. So what it is, you have to essentially say the negotiations you take with people like that, whether it's Stanford or on the public road, is you have 3 minutes to leave or we're going to arrest you all.
And
will
that work with the people who have staked out Supreme Court houses?
Yes. Well, if it turns out they're in violation of the rules on picketing in front of private houses, and it is unlawful, you arrest them, and then you remove them. And now the question is how you try them. If they do it once, maybe not so heavy, but if they try to repeat, then the sanctions have to go up. There can be no ambiguity about the enforcement of the law. The commands are clear. You can't obscure them. And it turns out that the violations are repeat. And when you disregard them, everybody loses. So there was not a single prosecutor. Go ahead.
What about this journalism that makes the Supreme Court justices targets of what you'd have to say negativity?
What I would say is there's a huge gap in the law, which is lawsuits by public figures who wish to keep an office against people who slander them turn out to be completely counterproductive. Because what happens is you publish what the charges are, and every other newspaper in town can now repeat them with impunity under privileges known as record libel.
So Justice Roberts has no defense. There's nothing he can do.
He has nothing that he can do. What has to happen is other people in the press have to rise to his defense and take after the people who take after him. A libel suit only works in the following circumstances. You suffered a huge financial loss. You're out of business. You do not care about your future reputation. And what you want is past damages. And they can't destroy you in the media because you're so inconspicuous. They don't know who you are. And all of those cases in the 1980s tended to get derailed. Right. And so what you do now is you have basically a law of libel, which gives no protection to anybody. And even when it's the good law that gives you the right protection, for people in high positions of influence and power, it turns out it's a mug's game to try to bring libel cases. What you have to do is have other people rush to your defense.
The Supreme Court will then weather the criticism of the observers. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Bye. Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Are you missing the sounds that matter most? What if you could hear every word, every laugh, and every moment crystal clear without spending thousands on expensive hearing aids? Introducing Audion Atom, the world's most affordable FDA-approved hearing aid. With the revolutionary A2 chip, you get premium sound, zero background noise, and a 24-hour rechargeable battery. They even have Bluetooth connectivity to connect to your cell phone or TV. Unlike those traditional bulky $5,000 prescription hearing aids, the Audion Atom is 90% smaller, 20 times cheaper, and works instantly. No visits to the audiologist needed. Audion Atom has over 500,000 happy customers who have trusted Audion Atom to restore their hearing. Our 100% money-back guarantee means zero risk to try. Don't like them? Simply return them and get your money back. They also come with a lifetime warranty. For the next 72 hours, the Audion Atom is 53% off. Go to tryhearingaid.com right now to order your pair for only $99. Again, go to tryhearingaid.com to order your pair for only $99. Order now before it's too late, as these hearing aids have sold out over 10 times this year. With Audion Atom, you can hear life again.